This is episode 57 of the Wildlife Photography Podcast. In this episode, a day on safari in the Masai Mara. Hi, everybody. My name is Jerry. I'm from Wild Eye. It is Tuesday morning. It's about 10 to 8. The temperature gauge on my vehicle says 4 degrees Celsius. It's a nice and cold spell in Johannesburg. And I'm just about getting onto the highway now to go to work. Good training session this morning. And because of traffic, I give myself anything between, 20 minutes to 2 hours to get to work. It just depends. I don't know how it works. Sometimes there'll be nothing on the highway. There's no accidents. It's just damn slow. So I have coffee with me in my takeaway mug. And I thought, let me use the drive this morning to chat about a day on safari in the Masai Mara, especially during the Great Migration. So it's a while ago I did a podcast on what it's like to do gorillas, another podcast on what it's like to do the chimpanzee tracking in Kibali. And those are kind of, I wouldn't say easy to discuss, but it's very similar. It's if you go on a track for gorillas, you're gonna get up at a certain time, you're gonna go to the same place, you're gonna more or less, depending on how far your group is, you're gonna do a certain amount of walking, but it's kind of scripted. The Great Migration, any photo safari for that matter, any safari, is not scripted. Absolutely anything can happen. Now, I've been going to the Masai Mara for, since 2012. The first year in 2012, sorry, 2011 I did one trip, which was through Photo Africa, my previous company. From 2012 onwards until this year, we've done, I think it was 3 or 4 safaris the first year. It was about 6 or 7 the second year, and since then, 9 safaris a year. So we've been doing the Masai Mara for a long time, and in all that time, so I'm guessing 9, 18, 27, 36, call it around about 50 safaris over the last couple of years that Wild Eye has run in the Masai Mara, we've ever only had one group who did not see a river crossing. Now, the idea of hinging the success of your Great Migration Safari on a singular event like a river crossing is not always great, because it's very easy then to come home and say, oh shit, it was a bad experience because I didn't see a crossing. There's so much more to this. And that particular group is about 4 years ago. They, obviously, they kind of disappointed halfway through, but at the end, when we spoke to them, they had zero issues. They had an unbelievable time because of what the Mara is and because of what the kind of experiences and sightings that they got. So it's not all about the river crossings, but if you go during Great Migration, obviously you try and see and experience and photograph as much of that as possible. You've heard me say that you can only shoot what you see. So if you don't see wildebeest, you can't photograph them. So if the herds aren't in the area, what are you going to photograph? Then you're not doing the migration. The Mara, however, like I said, is incredible for a wide variety of species. And the nice thing there, compared to safaris in Southern Africa, Southern Africa's ecosystems involve a lot more shrubbery and bush. So a lot of the time, and it's not just your backgrounds that are difficult, it's the environment is thick. It's, you have to photograph through foliage, next to foliage, over, under foliage, whatever the case is. So the Masai Mara, with its open rolling grasslands, really, really is phenomenal from a photographic point of view. So let me try and discuss for you what it's like to spend a day in the Masai Mara, and I'm going to specifically use our camp because we have our own Mara camp, as you guys know, and I truly and honestly believe that it is the best way to experience the Mara. Now, we've spoken about safaris in the past on this podcast, and you can go and sleep in a hotel room and there's aircon and stuff, but what's the point? Or sorry, in a lodge room with hotels and stuff, and you can either then have aircon droning all night long, or if you're in a more tented, open environment, you could hear nature. There is nothing as special as good. And I say this to people when they come to our camp, go to bed half an hour earlier than you think you want to, and just lay down there and listen. Listen to Africa around you, because in the tents, you have the tent, which is the canvas tents, and they've got the mosquito netting mesh windows. You can zip them up with canvas, but I recommend to keep them open because obviously the cool breeze, but the stuff you hear is absolutely amazing. So just for that, I prefer the camp. It's also, and this is the win, is the camp is on the banks of the river. Now, when I say on the banks of the Mara River, I'm not bullshitting you with some marketing talk. You literally, if you walk out of your tent and you walk 15 steps straight out of your tent, you're going to fall into the river. you're on the banks of the river, which you're in the environment all the time. It's a completely immersive experience. You don't have to walk through pathways to get to the lodge, then get in a game drive vehicle, and then leave. And only then you get to the good stuff. So there's, I'm leaving, what are we today? Tuesday, I said. I'm leaving next Friday to start 2 weeks worth of photographic safaris in the water that I'm hosting. So I will be doing Snapchat and Instagram stories, maybe a bit of Periscope, one of that's still relevant. We'll play with Periscope a bit, but also I'm going to podcast from there and hopefully speak to some of our staff. But I'm going to kind of just give you an idea what it's like to spend one day in the Mara on a photo safari. So what would happen is in the mornings early, normally about 5:30, the Maasai guys, my team of Maasai guys, will come and wake you up. So you're in your tent, there's a little basin, hand water basin thingy outside, that's very technical, a little fold-up hand basin. The guys will bring you some hot water in the morning. They'll pour the hot water there for you to kind of wash your face, wash your hands, and then they'll say, Jumbo, good morning. You have to give them an idea that you're awake. You can then, if you want, have a shower. We work on a bucket shower system. It is the best shower you'll have in your life. Under the stars, it's beautiful. It's 24 hours. Some people prefer to have a shower in the morning before they go on game drive. Other people, anytime during the day, after morning drive, evening, whatever. So you get your wake-up call, you wash your hands and stuff. You make your way down to the dining tent. Now, the time you walk, and this is beautiful, from when you leave your tent and you're walking to the dining tent where coffee and stuff is set up, it's cool and crisp because you're on the banks of the river, remember? And the sounds, you've got the bird sounds, is unbelievable. What's cool for me is, excuse me, frog in the throat there, is that before the guys come and wake you up, you'll hear the dawn chorus, the birds starting to wake up. And first it's one little confused bird, like at 4 o'clock, 4:15 it builds. And then by the time these guys wake you up, the sound in the thickets and the forests around the river and around the camp is just beautiful. So that in itself is just worth waking up for early. So you make your way with your torch. Every tent has a little lamp thing that you can charge. You make your way down to the dining tent. Now the dining tent is also on the bank of the river. It's a 5 by 10 meter, think army style tent. Inside we've got our dining area. There's a coffee station. By the time you get there, the coffee will be up and you'll have your coffee with a rusk. Yes, if you follow my Instagram and Snapchat, rusk is important. You have your rusk, and people mostly pull up their chairs and they sit on the banks of the river with their backs towards the tent, looking at the river and sunrise on the other side. So because we're in the Mara Triangle, which is on the western side of the river, every time we wake up and you look across the river, excuse me, sure, need coffee, you look at the sunrise and you can see the sky starting to turn. People come down, how did you sleep, what did you hear? It's always a conversation. What did you hear? The hippos often keep you awake the first couple of nights when you get used to it. They are noisy like you cannot believe, honking and shouting and screaming and running up and down the river. Beautiful though. So we have our coffee, we discuss what we heard in the evening. Myself and my guys will go and chat to the local guides, Jimmy, Sammy and them, in order to say, right, what did the rangers update us on? What do we know is out there? What's our plan for the day? Right, so we have our coffee or 2 cups sometimes, and then we make our way out. So the rules in the Maasai Mara is you can't leave your camp before 6:30, but because we're immersed, we're not at a full-time lodge, we kind of start making our way from 6:15, heading out. So by the time the sun rises, which is generally about 6:45-ish, we hit the main road, the river road, which runs north-south through the triangle, and we start working from there. So we're out when the sun comes up, which from a photographic point of view is obviously vital. So the idea then is, if the rangers, who we've got 2 rangers every evening at camp, they walk around and kind of keep animals away because it's not fenced. When they get collected early morning, my guides chat to them and see what they saw during the evening, the guys who collected them. If there's anything worthwhile investigating, we make our way there. Otherwise, it's a roll of the dice. We decide, right, yesterday afternoon there was a buildup of wildebeest down south. We slowly make our way down south. And then it's very similar to a normal safari where you kind of drive around and find stuff. Now, if you listen to a podcast a couple of episodes ago with Mike, the guys don't track worth shit. They cannot see a track if you draw a red circle around it, but their instinct and visual acuity is just insane. They spot stuff miles off. So if and when you find your sightings, you do what you do. We photograph, we reposition, we follow animals, and then the main goal, obviously, is to try and get these river crossings. We're not hedging the experience on it, but it isn't a big part of it. So it is such a dynamic thing. I mean, we can still talk about the Great Migration, maybe in a podcast, of what it is and how it works, in a separate case. But one morning, you might drive out of camp. So we come through the thickets. That's kind of the entrance road to the camp. And outside, it is pitch black with wildebeest. As far as your eye can see, it is just herd after herd after mega herd. And it looks like ants into the distance. They are absolutely everywhere. And then that's the kind of pressure that will eventually make them build. Happens on the other side of the river as well. But the next, literally, the very next morning, you could come down through the access and you won't see a thing. It is such a dynamic thing. It's unbelievable. So some people start panicking by day two if they haven't seen any wildebeest. Don't worry. It happens. It's an ebb and flow. It's a natural occurrence. And if we need to drive to go and fetch them, we'll do that because we've got time. But most of the times, these things come and go. So most of the times in the mornings then, while the sun is up, as soon as the sun is up, we work the river systems because the predators all hang around the river because of the crossings. There's crocodiles in the river. There's leopards, lions, cheetahs kind of on the edges and leading away from the river. And then these wildebeest cross the river. So how it would work is if, for example, we see a massive herd of wildebeest on the other side of the river, the guys have, like I said, they've got incredible instinct for these things. And they'll say, okay, no, not yet. And after a while, and even after 2 or 3 days, you will look at a herd and you'll get a feeling from them. You'll get a feeling that, you know what, there is a bit of an energy that these things want to do. There's sound, you can see they're moving. And at a distance, it's phenomenal. You can see when they're moving and they literally form lines at a distance. So you can see these things are marching. They're kind of in migration mode, if you will. And they're all facing in the same direction. If you look from a distance and they're all head down grazing, facing in all directions, there's not much intent from them to cross the river right now. So I'll speak more about that in the migration podcast that I'll do. But we'll go, for example, choose a vantage point up on our side of the river, looking across, so we've got a good vantage. And it might be about a 3-4 minute drive for us to get to the river. So we'll sit at the top and have coffee, juice, Tuskers, whatever, have some snacks, breakfast if necessary, while waiting for these herds to do their thing. As and when they come closer, if the guides think there's a good chance that they can actually cross and they're going to cross, we make our way closer to the river. Now, if you are on the triangle side where we are, there's rangers who patrol you and they stop you from getting too close to the river. They stop you from driving right to the edge and blocking these things. Because think about it, these poor wildebeest are so stressed already. Now, if you're going to park there with your big shiny Land Cruiser, it's just another reason for them not to cross. So on the triangle side, we keep back anything from 100 to 200 meters, and the ranger will then wait. As soon as those wildebeest then go down and they hit the water, once they start, you almost cannot stop them. And then you rush in and you'll get your view and your photography from there. There are some sightings and some crossing points where you have a good visual from the beginning, so you're not bothering their access point, especially if the river makes like curves and stuff. But the triangle side, that's how we do it. So we wait, hang back. If they start crossing, and you'll know, the energy picks up, the noise picks up. More often than not, you'll see some dust coming from the point where they're accessing the river. You go in, and then it starts from there. Photographing, it's a very different story. I'll chat about that in another time. The one thing which everybody asks about the crossings and the river and the Great Migration is the amount of traffic, vehicle traffic, human traffic. I'm not going to lie to you. On the Masai Mara side, the National Reserve, at times it's a complete clusterfuck of note. Excuse my French, but that's how bad it is. There can be anything up to 40, 50 vehicles on the other side. And the problem there is the scale of the lodges and the beds on that side is so big, and there's a lot of people coming in from the outside. They come in and that's all they hedge their bets on. They are just there to see a crossing. So some of them will hang back, but they are complete idiots that they will often, more often than not, they will almost spoil the crossing. So these guys hang around pretty much from 10 through 3, 4 o'clock on the hills back from the river. They pack out there and they have their picnic lunches because they have a 2-3 hour drive back to whichever lodge they came from, right? So we're lucky that we're 5 minutes away from our camp. So often, if we find a crossing very early morning or late afternoon, I've had crossings, many, many situations where it was just myself and my 4 wild eye vehicles, nobody else. So yes, it is something, we try and manage it as best we can, and it is possible, but it's something, maybe a discussion with the parks ranger at some stage, but it's something they're going to have to manage going forward. Anyway, different discussion. So we then go and do our crossings. Some of these crossings last anything from, I mean, I've had crossings which is literally 3 minutes when there's a small group of like 1,000. They come in, they go through. The longest crossings that we've had is literally 4.5 hours long, and then it doesn't stop. They just keep coming. It's when these things hit the river, it's almost like a magnet, and all the wildebeest on the plains behind them just get sucked in. We had crossings 4.5 hours long where we eventually left. They didn't stop. They were still going, and most of the guests said, "Yo, we can't do this anymore. We've had all our shots. Let's go and look for something else." So it can happen where you've got so much crossing activity that you don't have to worry about, are we going to see something? So you leave. Now, initially on our photo safaris in the Mara, we'll all stay together. The vehicles will kind of stay together more or less. We'll kind of take little loop roads but come together. We're scanning more ground that way. And the guys have a radio, so they're talking to each other, my guys, so that we know where to find stuff and so on and so forth. After a couple of days, what we'll do is we'll decide, like 3 or 4 days into a 7-day trip, I'll say to the people at dinner, right, guys, we've had amazing crossings. If some of you want to keep doing crossings, those vehicles will go to the crossings. If those of you that have had enough crossings want to do something else, we'll go to the marshes, look for lions, we'll go drive the escarpment, we'll go look for cheetah on the Tanzania border. That starts playing out later. But initially, we try and kind of manage the whole group as one in order to get the same kind of... It's one of the sucky things is getting back in the evening on any safari when there's different vehicles involved. One vehicle saw Jack and everybody else saw like lions killing buffaloes, killing elephants and so on and so forth. And you've got to sit there over dinner conversation and hearing what you didn't see. That sucks. So we try and manage it as best as possible. So that's kind of what we do. Now, in the mornings, okay, I'm digressing. See, I do that, my rabbit holes. So we go out and we work sightings. If there's crossings, we wait. Sometimes we wait for 6-7 hours. Every morning, we take a packed breakfast. So yogurt cups with granola. The chefs either do like a scrambled eggs and sausage or breakfast muffins or whatever, coffee and the whole thing. That if we go out, because there's nothing worse on safari being out and having to go back for a meal. There are a lot of lodges that operate in that fashion. So we always take our breakfast with us so that we can stop anywhere and have breakfast. So if we have a great lion sighting or a great crossing, whatever the case might be, we can stop, look at the sighting, decide, cool, let's go 10 minutes down the road, have our breakfast and go back to the sighting. In some instances, we've even had our breakfast in the vehicle. Not as civilized and comfortable, but hey, you're sitting next to the Mara River, one of the greatest rivers in Africa, having coffee and a breakfast muffin. Nothing wrong with that. Then we carry on. More often than not, we'll go back for lunch. Right about 12, 30, 1, whatever the case is. But that, again, is only if there's no sightings on the go that we're working. So if, for example, we're sitting on a hill, we've had our breakfast earlier in the morning, we've had a great morning, there's a crossing building on the other side and we want to wait, we will literally then phone the camp. I will phone Joseph, my chef, and Dixon, who's my main Maasai kind of front of house guy, and say, listen, we're at this tree in the Mara waiting for the crossing, please bring lunch. They then bring tables, chairs, the chef brings whatever lunch he would have made out in the field, he brings it to us. Because remember, we are there for the experience of being out in the field. Food is a necessity, and a lot of lodges are making a big deal of it. It is, but it's not the first and foremost. So we will have lunch brought to you. I've had weeks in the Mara, my 7-day packages, where we didn't go back for lunch once during a 7-day trip. Every day, either we just didn't have lunch, because there's always snacks and stuff in the car, crisps, nuts, fruit, and so on, or we had lunch brought to us. So it's great. So if we go back to lunch, people will have lunch. Some of them might have a shower, download. We might do a bit of Lightroom, depending. But we're normally not there for long. And 1.5-2 hours later, 3 o'clock, we go again. If there's crossings building somewhere on the river, we'll go there. Alternatively, we'll go normally in the afternoon looking for different things. The marshes in the northern side of the triangle is great. That's where the Marsh Pride from Big Cat Diaries hang out. So that's quite a nice one. And then in the afternoon, some people very seldomly stay back to just sit and have a drink on the river and kind of just watch the sun go down. But the afternoons, then we go out and keep going. If we, for example, stayed out, what we've done in the past and we've had lunch brought to us is we'll literally go back to camp on the way, just drop off, refill the cooler boxes with drinks, tuskers, get snacks if necessary, quick bathroom break, and then off we go again. So the whole thing is based on being out in the field. It has to be. So the days are never scripted. It's like at a lodge, for example, like Mala Mala, they're a lot more scripted, unless you book a private vehicle, that you have to be back for this time, this time, this time. If you book a private vehicle, you have your own time. In the Mara, we never know exactly how long we're going to be out. We, in our minds, as guides and kind of as the local oaks, decide, you know what, we're probably going to be out for the whole day. If we come back, that's fine, but we plan to be out there the whole day. It's and now some of you purist wildlife photographers will say, yeah, but you can't photograph during midday, it's harsh light. No, you're wrong, and you're missing out on a lot of good photography, especially with something like the crossings, because the wildebeest do tend to cross kind of midday-ish when it gets warmer, but the drama and the contrast of the actual sighting can be very well mimicked by the drama and the contrast in your photography. So the harsh light and shadows often work for it, but like I said, if we get sightings of crossings early morning, late afternoon, and you get some golden light on the dust, oh man, it just sings, it's beautiful. So we shoot all day, we're out there the whole day. It is the greatest wildlife spectacle on earth, so you have to be out there all day. Right, so normally you have to be back by about 6:30 in the evening from a park ranger point of view, because they don't want people running around all night long or into the evening because of poaching. So they we come back around about 6:30 to 7. When we get back, obviously the camp looks all different. There's lanterns everywhere and there's a fire going and the whole African thing, which is quite amazing. Some people then choose to have a shower. They choose to kind of go drop their stuff in their tent and then go for a shower. So the guys will fill up their shower. Other people go straight to the media tent, which is kind of our Lightroom Photoshop tent, if you will. There, everybody has their little station. They can charge gear there, for example, laptops and cameras, and they download their images. Often one of two things happen. Either everybody ends in the media tent with their drinks, and myself and my guides run through them and we kind of help with Lightroom questions and processing and downloading and whatever the case might be. So it becomes a very interactive social environment there. But what we've done the last while is we've urged people to spend more time around the fire. We can do Lightroom anywhere. I can hook up with you on a Skype, for example, and we can do Lightroom. So we download images, we charge stuff, we go and sit at the fire, listening to the night sounds, then it's dinner time. Dixon's very strict on his dinner. Like if he comes to call you at 8 o'clock, Dixon's my Maasai guy, golden, beautiful man. If he comes to call you for dinner, you need to come and eat now because the chef says. So we've kind of tempered his enthusiasm a bit over the last year or so, because there's a lot to be said of just sitting at a fire, enjoying Africa. So dinner gets served, and then after that, one of two things, actually one of three things, people either go straight to bed and they go and do what I said earlier, listen to the night sounds. Some people go back to the fire for an after-dinner drink. Other people go back to the tent and they do their Lightroom and downloading. For a lot of people, the downloading and cleaning, because you shoot a lot, you do a lot of photography on these trips. I mean, if you have a good couple of crossings and some good line action, it's easy, shoot 2,000 to 4,000 images a day. I kid you not. The record I've had on a migration trip was a 10-day trip I did a couple of years ago, and the guy shot 48,000 images in that time. I kid you not. 48, so it's almost 5,000 images a day. So then in the evening you go back, and then the next day it all starts again. It's a very difficult thing to script this, like I said, because the only things that's a given, the only thing during these days is you wake up at 5:30, 6 o'clock is coffee, we leave, yeah? The next thing that's given is we'll always take breakfast with us, and the other given is we're back at camp by about 7. The middle of the day is, we do whatever we can to maximize your time in the field, your photography, your experience of the Maasai Mara, and then dinner, and then run from there. It really is, from a photographic point of view, there's very few places that offer the kind of photography the Mara does because of what it is. The open landscapes, the incredible density of animals and diversity, it's quite phenomenal. So that's about it. Wow, I'm just trying to think what else to cover. So what I'll do is, in an upcoming episode, maybe actually even from the Mara, this is a good idea. When I'm in the Mara, I'll try and do a podcast and chat to some of the guides as well, just about the migration, what it is, how it works. Because it's a very interesting thing. A lot of people don't quite understand. They say, when does the migration start? It happens all year round. It just depends on where they are and why they go there. So it's a full-time thing. I'll do that when I'm in the Mara. And also, for those of you that haven't seen it yet, go and Google Wild Eye Mara Camp. Or go to wildeye.co.za, the website, and look for Mara Camp. Andrew did a blog post on there a while ago on our camp. You'll see some pictures of the tents, of the staff, the food, the experience. It is, it really, really is special. I can't believe 2 weeks from now, I'll be sitting at camp, which is, actually, I won't be sitting at camp, I'll be out in the field, but you know what I mean. So, that's the migration, guys. It really is, there's so many elements to this that make it special. And the one thing that I just to end off with is, a lot of people go back to a place because of the wildlife. They might go back to the place because of the lodge itself, like the rooms are nice or whatever. I would say, and we've got a lot of return guests, which is, we're very grateful for that. The lot of people come back to our Wild Eye Mara camp because of the staff. We have these, they're not hospitality trained, but they've been with us for 6 years now. When my guys are not working for us during migration season in the Mara, they're back home tending cattle. These are legit Maasai guys who have not gone, a lot of the times in hospitality you can get, it feels like they're just following a script. This is not the case. These guys are legit. They honestly, they care. And I say to everybody on that when I do my brief, when we start the week, is that if you find time, Paul Dixon, or his Maasai name is Sakaya, or Francis, whose Maasai name is Tenke, pull them aside at one night and just chat to them. Talk to them about their lifestyle. Talk to them about the times they had to kill lions to prove that they were a man, to become a warrior. The stories these guys tell, they are legit, beautiful, amazing people. And that's why a lot of people come back to the camp, is because of them. I mean, I would like to think it's about me and my guides, but it's more often than not the Maasai guys. Anyway, it is a fantastic experience. For those of you that are not yet, go and follow me on Instagram and Snapchat. I'll be doing some stories and Snapchat stories from there during my 2 weeks coming up. And I will also, like I said, try and podcast from there, do some videos in between. It is a phenomenal, phenomenal experience. And if a lot of people say, if they're going to do only one safari in their lifetime, what should they do? You cannot go wrong with considering Great Migration Safari. It is everything you've seen in the movies, in the documentaries, and more. And it is the density and diversity of animals that will blow your mind. It really is incredible. So there's a couple of things you're going to look for. On the Wild Eye site, look for the Wild Eye Mara camp. There's a blog post with the details. You can also search, if you go onto the Wild Eye site, use a little magnifying search icon thing and type in Great Migration Trip Report. And you'll get an idea of the camp, the experience, the people, the wildlife. It really, really is special. So if you have any questions on the migration and the migration photographic safaris, let me know. But we'll do more on these, kind of how to pack the migration and so on, in the next couple of episodes as we go. Anyway, I'm at office now. Thank you for joining me on my ride to work. It's always a pleasure. And thank you for listening. If you have questions, guys, fire them through. I will either get back to you personally or I will include it in episode 60, which is another Q&A episode. As always, thank you so much for your attention. Thank you for listening. I'm having fun with these podcasts. I hope you guys are as well. And I will chat to you in the next episode. My name is Jerry. I'm from Wild Eye. Have a good one.